Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
It's Here and Now, and we all know that Twitter has changed the way we communicate with 500 million users, over 500 million messages a day. And tweets also have changed the way we write, forcing us to condense thoughts to 140 characters. But is Twitter also changing the way we speak? There have been more than 150 Twitter-based studies. One of them focuses on how tweets are more like speech than writing. Jacob Eisenstein is assistant professor in the School of Interactive Computing at Georgia Tech and part of the research team studying how tweets are like speech. And he joins us from the studios of Georgia Public Radio in Atlanta. And Jacob, we know one thing you're looking at is how regionalisms are moving around through Twitter. Is there Twitter dialect or accent?
So there's not just one Twitter accent, but many. This is one sort of popular idea about social media, that there's a dialect of how you would write in social media. Some call it NetSpeak. But in fact, what we've seen in the work that we've done with my colleagues at Carnegie Mellon and here at Georgia Tech is that the way that people write in social media, not only is it different from the way that they write otherwise, but it'll differ markedly across the United States, even more so than more traditional forms of written language would differ.
Give us some examples.
So you can think about a few different types. In some cases, it would appear that regional pronunciations or pronunciations that reflect other types of dialect are getting transcribed into social media. So, for example, a word like something could be written S-U-T-T-I-N. What happens is the G gets dropped and the T-H gets stopped. So you go from something to Sutton, and that's something you can see written out. Another example or another type of word is a word that we might know from spoken language, like hella, which means very in Northern California. Can I say hella?
Yeah, you can. You just did.
We know from spoken language to expect it to be centered in Northern California, and in fact, that's what we see in social media too. And then the third type are words that really seem to be social media specific, or at least specific to computer-mediated communication. These are words like abbreviations for multi-word expressions. Well, you know LOL. LOL can be used across the United States. Well, there are alternative forms of LOL, some of which I couldn't spell out for you on the radio. Mm-hmm. Some of those are very, very geographically specific.
Well, you mentioned Sutton. Time magazine inaccurately attributed that to our region up here in Boston, but you say that actually you could see that coming from New York. Another example, IKR for I know, right? Popular in Detroit?
Yeah, Michigan area, yeah.
So you can see, you can sort of track some of these, what are actually regionalisms. What are some of the other things you're looking at? We know you have a big study coming out and you're not prepared to fully divulge, but we get a hint in Time magazine that you're looking at race. You might see a word move from a city that has a large black population to another city, let's say Memphis in Tennessee, that has a large black population, but not move as quickly to Nashville, which has more of a white population, which tells you that words can move racially. How do you see all these tweets?
So what we're trying to do with that study is, and this is some work in progress, we want to see how words spread between places. So we know that it's not just static. We know it's not just the case that a word just appears in one city and never leaves or continues to exist there without spreading to other parts of the U.S. And what we believe is that by studying the way that words move between cities, we can identify some of the demographic factors that really that shape people's perceptions of culture and similarity. So if here in Atlanta, you know, it was found that we were more likely to adopt words from, for example, Memphis than Nashville, that would tell you something about the relationship between, you know, Memphis and Atlanta. And then we'd want to look at the demographic characteristics of those cities to explain that relationship.
Mm-hmm. And you might see that Memphis and Atlanta have higher African-American populations than Nashville. And that might tell you something about the tweets going back and forth.
Yeah, so we're trying to really aggregate information across many different words whose geographical trajectories we've been able to identify and try to see what's the high-level picture that comes out in terms of the transmission of linguistic change, at least in terms of words.
Well, other researchers have looked at how men and women tweet. There's a difference. Women use the word I more. Men are more likely to send links or use numbers. They've looked at the difference between older and younger Twitter users. Younger users are more likely to use all caps. Dutch researchers found that younger tweeters are more likely to be very expressive, stretch out words like nice to have 10 I's in it. But what else are you looking at when you look at how different regions might share words? What else does that tell you?
To me, it really comes back to the sense of identity. So I think language, we know this with spoken language, is really deeply connected to people's sense of personal identity. And there's a great line of research from sociolinguistics focusing on speech that's shown this again and again over the last few decades, that generally was thought not to be true in written language. And I think the reason is that until recently, written language was very constrained. So you learn to write in school. You use writing for official documents, you know, writing to your attorney or something, or writing, you know, in the context of your work. So written language wasn't really free to express personal identity in the way that spoken language has been throughout history. Now with the advent of social media and computer-mediated communication generally, that's changed. And people are able to use written language as a key component of their daily social interactions. And that's, I think, the reason we're seeing this kind of variation according to geography, all the dimensions that you mentioned, geography, age, gender, and so on.
Well, and in other words, people from Cleveland might never have had the reason to write a formal letter to someone in Boston or to speak to someone in Boston, but now they do through Twitter. So whatever the language uses in Cleveland are, they're going to have a better chance of making their way to Boston than they ever did.
Perhaps. So I think the premise of social media is that it could connect anybody anywhere. But the reality is that most people have social media networks that are actually incredibly constrained geographically. And I think if that wasn't true, it wouldn't be possible to even detect these kind of regional differences because the change would spread so quickly. What we're finding is that if you look over a period of 2 or 3 years, which is already perhaps half the lifespan of Twitter, you can see these kind of geographical differences. Some of them will change over that time period. Some of them won't. But people's networks seem to be compact enough that they can preserve some regional differences. My personal favorite one is an abbreviation. This is, you know, LOL, that stands for laugh out loud. So this one, I can't tell you what it stands for. It's CTFU. It's cracking up.
Oh, boy. Please don't tell us what that stands for.
So it's cracking up, and it indicates that something's funny. The reason I like this one is that when we first came across this, it was 2010, and it was popular in Cleveland, where we now know it seems to have originated, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. And I presented this work to a group of linguists, and this was the one example that really bothered them. The reason is if you've spoken to people from these cities, you realize that the spoken dialects are completely different across these three cities. So someone from Cleveland really has a Great Lakes accent. Someone from Philadelphia emphatically does not, and Pittsburgh is doing its own thing. So the idea that these three cities with three different spoken dialects would share something that the rest of the country did not share in terms of social media, I think, you know, reveals the fact that in some ways social media is going to parallel spoken language, but in other ways it really reflects new kinds of identity and new kinds of groups.
Interesting. Jacob Eisenstein, assistant professor in the School of Interactive Computing at Georgia Tech. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So, Jeremy, it sounds as if Twitter is spreading regionalisms across state and city lines, but they're still staying within social and demographic groups.
You know, you also hear about this phenomenon, Robin, with television and the idea that maybe some of the regional accents that we have around this country are disappearing because so many of the people that we watch on TV are from California.
Yeah.
And so maybe we're all going to start to sound like we're from Southern California.
And will social media mean more of that? Well, we just know that if you start seeing wicked or the more forceful wicked pizza, it's not a bad word, parents, but it did come from here. Oh, and my tweets tomorrow will come from Mississippi. Going to visit listeners at Mississippi Public Broadcasting in Jackson. I cannot wait. Very excited about that.
You'll probably have a very thick Southern accent on
when
those
I
tweets.
Come back.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from Eton, offering the American Red Cross Radio Line, a portable solar-powered radio with cell phone charger and flashlight for emergencies or travel. Now at Best Buy.